who was directing Molière's Tartuffe, which will be playing at Hubbard Hall Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, February 20th through March 15th.
Is there anything else you want to talk to us about in terms of Tartuffe?
Well, I know what I want to ask about. I've seen a number of really talented Cambridge High School kids in productions.
Yeah,
do you have any in this one?
Well, you've put your finger on it. That's exactly what I wanted to talk about. We've got 5 out of the 12 in the cast that are high school students, and they've begun to be repeats. So people are beginning to really get some hours on stage, logging experience.
You mean repeats from previous productions?
Yeah.
Great.
So there's a nice young company beginning there. And that was the impulse from the early days, was to get young people in there. And that was part of the kind of the opening idea. The mission statement was to have it be a mentoring company where you have professionals on stage with young people.
That was certainly Kevin's dream back at the beginning.
It was. And we did as much as we could over the last few years. And it seems like David is really going with that ball. And it's great to see that.
Well, David's working in the schools. He's teaching in the schools.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had a lot of them involved in terms of the
festival.
We're talking about this is David Snyder, the new executive director and artistic director of the theater.
And a frequent guest on our show.
Yeah. Anything else about Tartuffe?
Well, the only cast member I have not mentioned is Peter Dulakis.
Oh, tell us.
He was, I don't know if you, did you see Hadrian?
Yes.
Well, he was, do you remember Audrey, the cleaning woman at the Vatican? She eats pickles?
Vaguely.
I'm kind of remember.
It was hilarious. So I've brought him back, and he's also been in other plays. At Hubbard Hall, but I've brought him back in his female persona.
Oh, how great!
Playing the tyrannical mother of the family, Madame Purnell. So she's huge, and she won't listen to anybody, and she has her opinions, and her maid.
Oh, I know who he is. Yeah. Yes,
he's a riot, and he's also a member of the Mop and Bucket,
right.
Comedy troupe in Albany, which is an incredibly amazing thing.
He's a very big guy.
He's a very big guy. He's extremely funny and he's very well read and an interesting person. So it's wonderful to have him back. I've always been delighted to have him around, and this is a good one.
Hearing you talk about libraries made Sally and me think about our son, who has in New York a company called Instant Shakespeare, which each year goes through the entire canon doing book in hand performances in libraries. In New York, and sometimes with very small audiences, sometimes larger audiences. But they found that a venue where they can really explore the work and find
great
audiences.
But again, I think it's this idea of taking theater to people. If people aren't coming to theater, you take the theater to the people where they are.
I
think that's a very important aspect.
And it's necessity that makes stuff like that happen. If I had nice, big, cushy jobs, I wouldn't be thinking about this, you know, but I think the best part of theater in our history in America was vaudeville, and that was when all those groups like the Marx Brothers and Howard Lloyd and Chaplin and those, they all perfected their pieces on the road in little tiny towns here and there. Well, of course, they didn't have to compete with TV and
we have television. But you also teach as well as act. Is that not true?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I teach a lot in the schools in Vermont. And I have taught at all levels, universities and stuff like that.
How does teaching... I've both taught and direct. I'm curious to know how you respond to... How does teaching and direct... How do teaching and directing relate? Are they like... Are they different?
What? Oh, yeah. Well, it depends on who it is you're working with. If you're working with professionals or people who want to become professionals, the stakes are much higher and everyone is there to do the work no matter what. And so you really have to take apart their game and look at habitual behavior and stuff like that. And it's a very scrutinizing and difficult process. It's like working, if you were a coach for an Olympic swimmer, you would take their stroke apart to a point where they wouldn't even know how to float, let alone swim fast. So that happens with professional actors. When you're directing, you don't want to go there. You want to use people's strengths. And so you want to do some work to stretch them and to go to unfamiliar places, but not too much. So it's a balance. You only have 3.5 weeks to get there, and they got to be at their best. So you got to love them to death and respect them and use their ideas. With little kids, I've worked with three. It gets harder and harder the younger you get. So in my early career, I was teaching professionals, adults, when I was younger than they are. Now I'm like in my 60s, and I was teaching third and fourth graders, and doing big shows with like 75 of them in one play, and that was very difficult but wonderful, because their creativity, they don't even think of it as creativity, it's just there, you know.
But then you're teaching, you're directing. How does that affect your acting?
My acting?
Yeah.
Oh God, I don't even think of myself as an actor. I don't really like myself as an actor.
But you're a wonderful,
you're a good actor.
You're a wonderful actor.
Oh, thanks
actor.
For saying so.
We love
We've watched
here.
You act for years.
Well, maybe you have to think that you're not a good actor to be a good actor. I don't know, but being an actor for me is turbulent waters, and I don't feel very strong when I'm an actor. I feel really strong and confident, and magnanimous, and like I can help people when I'm directing or teaching. I don't feel that way as an actor. I feel insecure and like I don't really know what I'm doing.
Do you think all actors feel that way?
That's why they need directors.
I don't know. I do think so. Yeah. But, you know, some actors feel that way in rehearsal, and then they know, then they get it down and they polish their performance so it's absolutely repeatable. And then they feel good about it. And that's actually sometimes when their performance
dies.
Yeah. No matter how interesting it is. I think you have to have a certain amount of stage fright and insecurity when you're actually on the stage. Otherwise, you don't have that extra energy that comes from somewhere that you don't really know what it's about. But the unknown is crucial. And so not knowing really what you're doing.
Or how the audience will respond.
Yeah. Yeah, it's but on the other hand, you can't let that take over, because you're duty bound to hold your ground up there, and to show something that's of value.
Well, how does the audience affect you as an actor?
Very much, very much. You hear all the little noise in the audience. Like if somebody's off in the top left over there, uncrinkling a little cough drop. You hear it, and you know that that's because they're not really interested. And you think, okay, I'm losing that little group up there. There's a shadow up there. I've got to think about that. There's about 100 things that you got to think about all the time. It's like spinning plates. You know, you got to keep going back and get that plate so it doesn't topple over. Lots going on. And the audience is really the major energy in the room that creates the performance. You're there to stimulate it. But without them getting it and the energy going from elbow to elbow, it just doesn't happen. And that's why a house that doesn't have enough people in it, a play never really happens in that house, because the room is not transformed. Because the energy, the people are literally sitting too far away from each other for the energy to begin to build up in the room.
Well, how would that be? How would the different spaces we talked about, being in libraries and things like that, how does that affect it? How does the space?
Yeah, the space is everything. I haven't played in libraries, so I'm going to have to let you know after I get back.
Okay.
But I have played in unusual spaces, and I've played in a lot of outdoor spaces. And I have to say that I prefer all things being weighed. I prefer the indoor spaces where you can control light and sound, and guide people more toward where you're trying to get them to go.
I have a question.
So
as you act in different venues, are audiences different place to place?
Yeah, let me just finish my thought first.
Oh, okay. I thought you had.
I wanted to say that silence and darkness are my two favorite elements in the theater, because it's against those two things that everything happens. A bit of light, a bit of sound. And the more selective and carefully they're put out there.
Oh, and I almost cut that off. That's wonderful.
So anyway,
No, I was just wondering, are audiences, like audiences in San Francisco, different than audiences in Cambridge?
Yeah, although I would say there's a much, much larger difference between audiences in the United States compared to audiences in Europe.
Which is what?
Europeans are theater is part of their lifeblood. They all go to the theater. They know how the theater works. They know what makes a good piece, and it's part of their everyday conversation. And it's not that way over here. So we have to work a lot harder.
Yeah. Well, we want to thank you very much, John, for being here. We're going to have to.
It's great. I like your new 1 hour format.
Oh, good. I'm glad you do.
And for reservations, call 518-677-2495.
And we should also mention that there will be a delicious French dinner before the opening night performance. We've attended many of those, and they are quite delicious.
And a pay what you will.
Yes.
The night before opening.
And that really means you can pay, you know, 50 cents if that's what you've got. We want you to come and see it.
That sounds great. Thank you again, John.